Absolutely. I would say that it is older than the historical documents or historical documented aliens have been arriving here in New Mexico. So it's pre-television, pre-Roswell. It's pretty pre.
Basically, we realized that there was a connection between the UFO phenomenon and the entire state of New Mexico. What we didn't realize was the profound impact that this is having on people's lives.
High strangeness in New Mexico. It's a premise that I believe is really true. Hello, I'm Jerry Pippin. And our show today will be on UFO history and also the paranormal history for the state of New Mexico. You'll enjoy today's show on High Strangeness in New Mexico. That's the name of a documentary that covers the tales of mystery and intrigue. That is the lore of New Mexico. UFO history started in New Mexico. Also, strange tales of Native American legends. Our guest is Anthony Della Flora. He's on the line from Albuquerque. Tony, you've been in the film business a while.
Yes, I have. First as sort of a hobbyist, and now for a living. So going on my 10th, 11th year in the business.
You have a big festival coming up, I see, and that's one reason we're doing the thing by phone, is it's about the same time Roswell happens.
Right, just after Roswell, in fact, the Duke City Shootout. It's the world's first film-making festival. So how it's different from almost every other festival in the world is we don't just collect other people's movies and screen them. We actually solicit short scripts, and we pick seven of them, and we bring the winners to New Mexico, and they get a week to shoot, edit, and premiere their movies.
And now this is in Albuquerque, or where?
This is based in Albuquerque, yeah. We do some of the shooting around the state and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But
Tell me a little bit about this documentary that you've done about it's about basically it's about ETs and UFOs.
Well, it touches on some of that, but really this is more of a piece about people in what we describe as the UFO subculture. And so the focus is really on the people and the people's stories and not so much any particular incident or, in fact, one of the things that my partner and I, the director of this film, James Lujan, decided kind of early on was that this area, studying the study of UFOs was such a murky endeavor, so much information to be uncovered and checked out and everything, that we really decided we didn't want to, take the usual tact of most movies. Did this particular incident happen or did it not happen? That kind of thing. We started listening to these people's stories and just became fascinated about why they, or how they were affected, if they had an experience or why they continue to study it and get involved in it. And I think that's why we're a little bit different than most movies on this subject.
Yeah, so basically you're dealing with people who have had some sort of experience, some sort of story to tell.
Yes, for the most part. And we threw in a couple skeptics just for good measure to comment on some of the experiences. But, yeah, we have abductees in there. We have people who, claim to have been in the military, recovered UFOs, people who studied cattle mutilations in New Mexico here, which one of the theories is that those were tied in with UFOs, and kind of look at all different aspects and get a lot of different interesting stories and really go into how this has affected people.
Well, now lots of UFO people, by that I mean researchers, so-called experts, people who have had experiences. New Mexico is one of the leading places for this sort of thing.
That's what we really pretty quickly found out. Everybody knew about New Mexico. We had gone to I think it was called the Ozark.
Yeah, the Ozark
conference.
Right, right. We just came back from there where we did some broadcasts in Eureka Springs.
And we had been invited. A gentleman by the name of David Perkins, who lives in Colorado, New Mexico, here, and writes frequently about UFOs and is a cattle mutilation out and meet some people here and talk about it. And sure enough, we headed out there and talked to some people. I don't know if you know Tom Adams. He's kind of retired from the business, but he was one of the people who really had done a lot of research on things in New Mexico and ran into people. Everybody knew about everything out here. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
We've been doing UFO shows as not our complete menu. We have a fair and balanced menu. a little bit of a lot of things. And basically, UFOs originally, when I started doing it, was an attempt to get a real-life X-Files going. In other words, we just certainly didn't have the budget for that type of show. Yeah, but it's pretty easy to pick up the phone and call people who've had experiences. Now, of course, you had to do that to make contact with them, but you have to do something visually to make the story interesting. How'd you do that?
Well, I left a lot of that up to my partner, James Lujan, who was the director and the cameraman on this. This was a very low-budget affair when we started this. Essentially, it was the two of us. Occasionally, we had some help. But we just basically put a camera and some lights in the car and just started driving around New Mexico. And if you, I don't know if you've been to New Mexico.
Oh, sure. I go to New Mexico quite a lot.
As you know, it's a pretty scenic state and lots of beautiful, scenery to see.
Sure.
And we just, interspersed that with some, obviously live interviews with the folks we had. And we just were given material all along the way. I mean, everybody we went to talk to, they said, here, you've got to check out our pictures, check out our video, check out this. And so we were very fortunate, came away with quite a bit of visual material to work with this, and I think one of the things as people who've seen the movie, it's, as I say, it was a pretty low budget affair. We shot this on high 8 tape, which I don't even think exists anymore, but that was one of the early formats that was available. And frankly, it looks a little ragged. This was our first effort, but in a way, it lends itself to the story that way. It was kind of a raw, kind of unburnished story, and we didn't want to make it look.
Well, we've had several people with experiences from New Mexico on our shows over the years, so probably you've had some of the same people.
We may have. I mean, some of the people we feature in the movie are Gabe Valdez, who is the state policeman who was in the middle of the cattle mutilation stuff back in the late 70s when that really became a hot topic. And he was an investigator up there. Clifford Stone.
Yeah, I know Clifford quite well.
Clifford from
Roswell.
Was in there. Again, Tom Adams, David Perkins, Walter Hout, of course.
Yeah, now you actually shot an interview with him there at the UFO Museum.
The old museum, yeah.
Yeah, we did a couple of interviews of him when he was alive, and a very interesting man.
He is. We had a great time with him, and I don't know if you've seen the very beginning of the movie, but he was the very first interview we had scheduled. I was really, I knew something about Roswell and everything. I'd read about it like everybody else, but I really had no contact with anybody in particular down there. And I just called him on the phone one day and said, me and my buddy want to come down there with the camera and do some interviews, and he was very gracious and said, come on down, stop in and see me. And in that first scene, there's a gentleman named Henry Monteith who walks into the office and just starts having a conversation with Walter, and it's the very opening of the movie, and it was just a hoot. And it turned out, it kind of snowballed from there. We went to talk to Henry because he was such an interesting person, and everybody there just kept referring us to other people.
Oh, we've been to Roswell 5 straight years now, doing shows, and you're right. One thing leads to another. Somebody that the natives don't necessarily think is very important, the mass media hasn't covered them at all. All of a sudden you always get a good lead.
Yeah, you do. And we spent basically two years traveling around New Mexico, and we certainly never lacked for subjects. In fact, we did 80 hours of interviews over 2 years. And we still had a laundry list of people that we could have contacted, and we just finally at some point said, we need to sit down and do something with this. We could continue interviewing people for the rest of our lives, but we need to get this into a movie format and get it out to people.
New Mexico really has, you can go to any part of the state and there will be some UFO stories.
Yes.
I don't know of any part of the state that's been immune to that.
I don't either. You'd have to look pretty hard, actually.
And I do think with all of those stories and all of those things happening, something was going on. It may have just been military operations. May have been something else. You went in kind of naive, like I started doing these shows, kind of naive. It's like, hey, the good topic. After 80 hours, what do you think? I'm not trying to get you to commit to saying that you're one way or the other. I'm just kind of curious, your gut feeling. I say that I'm kind of agnostic, and it really upsets people who believe. And because they think, well, maybe I'm calling them liars, and that's not true. I believe they're telling me the truth. I just don't know what to simulate with it. I don't know what the story is exactly.
It's almost word for word what I was going to say, because, again, we went in with it. As I say, a journalist by trade. I'm not doing it anymore. I retired a couple years ago. But I basically try to stay the middle ground on most stuff. And we went into this saying, you know, there's an interesting story. I don't know if UFOs are from out of space or from outer space or whatever, but people have definitely had some kind of experience they need to talk about and they want to talk about. And I went in and I saw a lot of interesting things. I heard of a lot of interesting stories, but I consider myself, like you, an agnostic. And I've told people that. I said, I don't discount what you're saying. I've never personally had an experience that would, you know, sway me one way or the other, and I'm content to tell your stories and let the other people make up their minds.
Yeah, I finally, after four decades, I'm an old guy, had a sighting. Finally, it was in Phoenix. I was doing an interview at the Twin Peaks area in connection with the Phoenix Lights and in connection with actually a strange mist that would come down behind the Sandra O'Day O'Connor High School. And they kept losing security guards. They quit. And so we went up there, up an old trail, and couldn't get very far up there. It was just really impassable. And so I was doing a little stand-up, just making a tape with a couple of people. And lo and behold, out comes a flying triangle between the Twin Peaks. But here again, most people say, well, that must have changed your mind. And I'm not sure it did. I'm not, because I really accepted what these people were telling me all along. I just didn't know what to make of it.
Yeah, after all this, I'd have to say I'm pretty much in the same place. I wanted to just tell you a quick story. One weekend, we were James and I were going up to the Farmington and Aztec area. And Farmington, of course, had a big, what they call the Armada sighting.
Yeah. It even made the newspaper.
Yeah, and Aztec, of course, had an alleged crash up there. So we rounded up some people we wanted to talk to. Well, I was doing this at the time as kind of a hobby. I was working a full-time job as a journalist. So we got up there late one Friday night, and, it's a four-hour drive from Albuquerque to get up there, so it was a pretty good drive, so we got up there. And we had dinner, and I said, thinking, well, you know, there's a stretch of road between Farmington and Aztec where we're going to be meeting somebody, and I've never been on that road. Maybe we ought to just go out for fun and, you know, cruise that tonight. And then we were thinking, we're tired. Let's stay home and watch the X-Files. So we're staying in the hotel and watch X-Files,
sure.
Which we did. So, of course, we woke up next day on the front page of the local paper up there, I think it's the Farmington Daily News, was a story about these mysterious green lights that had been seen over that highway between Aztec and Farmington.
See, you got to pay attention to your hunches.
Exactly. Right at the exact same time we would have been out on the road.
Right.
And that's the closest I've ever come to seeing something like that. But.
So this story has to have a movie. We have to have a beginning and an end. So what is the end? A lot of questions, or do you have conclusions? Or
I think it's left. It's an interesting. I don't know what the word is. It's a mirror for people watching the movie. Let's put it that way. Depending on where you fall, or if you're a true believer, or you're a true skeptic, or you're like most people right in between, almost everybody finds one of the characters in there, one of the people, or one of the stories in there that they can relate to, and which did our job well, that we got all the viewpoints across. But, yeah, basically, I mean, we finished this whole piece, and I came out with questions still. And I think most people who watch it came out with questions. And we have one character, again, Henry Monteith, who has since died since we made the movie, but he was a physicist at Sandia Laboratories and claimed to have contact, you know, high-level security clearances, and had talked to people in Washington about UFOs and everything like this. And he's a very engaging, very literate, articulate man all the way through the movie. And at the very end, he tells a story about how his wife was impregnated by aliens and she bore alien babies. And so you're left with this very kind of strange disconnect. Here's a guy I was listening to who made perfect sense all the way through the movie, and then he tells me this just bizarre story. What am I supposed to think about this? And that's where we, I think, that's kind of what, you know, hopefully that's what people were coming away with. It's like there's something very interesting going on here, and we don't necessarily know what the answer is, but it's interesting enough to keep asking the question.
We'll be right back. We've got to take a break. And Tony, when we come back, let's follow that up a little bit, the impregnation and creating hybrid babies. That seems to be an overriding theme always. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. This is the UFO Files. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com. Tony, of the abductions, when you started in experiences, we call them experiencers now. That's kind of the N word. When you first started, had you heard about this hybridization program and supposedly that goes on, and the fact that people are, ETs are impregnating women's eggs and then taking them back? Had you heard that from the first?
We had heard something about that. I mean, there was a lot of different.
The reason I'm asking, when somebody looked you right in the eye and told you that, just like the fellow with the PhD who made a lot of sense, and all of a sudden at the end, after he gets your confidence,
right,
he tells you a story like this. What did you think the first time around?
I was flabbergasted. I didn't know. I had developed a relationship with Henry over, you know, we filmed him two or three different times, and have a lot of respect for the guy. And this story, he was relating this to another person in the movie that we were just standing back there filming. And my jaw dropped. I was like, what is this all about? I mean, I'd heard about this, but you're right. This was the first person I'd ever up close, you know, face-to-face heard talk about it.
No, I'm
just, you know, you don't want to think you can't just discount him. I know this guy.
Yeah.
And
I must tell you, I probably interviewed over 40 years 100 people like this who insist this has happened. Many of them are intellectual, not all of them. They all can't be creative writers.
No, that's the thing. When you see these people, and there's another woman, Barbara Glasgow, who relates an abduction experience. She wasn't impregnated or anything, but she had some of the similar things that people have talked about and was looked at by, you know, some kind of alien doctor. And this happened. But the interesting thing about this was what intrigued me about this particular story was this happened with her and her sister. And it happened in 1958. And I thought, wow, that's interesting, because you've got this didn't really become a part of popular culture, the abduction phenomenon, until later. And there was I'm blanking on the name, but the famous case in '63 that happened.
Betty and Barney Hill.
Barney Hill, right. Well, and then even that took a while to get.
Yeah, I mean, it actually didn't really start making imprints till the 70s and didn't get to be gospel till the 90s.
Right, so that took a while to develop, but you know, as that became part of popular culture, then there's been the criticism as well. People are just hearing this and they're making this stuff up in their minds and they're they're relating it to what everybody else is saying. But Barbara and her sister, as they say, this was back in 1958. This was pre almost anything regarding abduction. So when she was sitting there, you know, she looked like my grandmother. Now she's sitting there telling me this story, obviously very emotional experience, and that this happened. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I don't know what to say. I can't say she's a liar. I have no idea. She's obviously experienced something, and that's the thread that goes through this movie. Except of course with the skeptics we interviewed, but the people are quite sincere, as you know, about what they experienced. And again, do I think it was aliens or they're passed into another dimension or does something happen? You know, that's for probably a better reason.
Well, yeah, and you get into New Mexico history and Native American history, there's lots of paranormal things going on there as well, despite UFOs.
Right, and we have a Native American gentleman who talks about some of that. And he says, well, before people heard about UFOs or anything, we always had stories about the little people who would appear to us. And the description is somewhat like the Greys or
sure.
We have in popular culture. But he said, this goes back hundreds and thousands of years. It's not something we just invented recently. And this definitely has been part of New Mexico lore. And I think one of the things we kind of touched on before about why New Mexico, well, I think there's a couple things. You do have that military component, but you also, as one of the people in the movie describes, you've got a place that where very ancient culture butts right up against the most modern technology. You've got Indian tribes within a couple miles of Los Alamos National Laboratories and Hispanic communities that are hundreds of years old. And so you've got this this tension, sort of, between the very new and the very ancient. And I think that, you know, one theory is that sort of creates, there's sort of a tension in the air that maybe where some of these stories arise, you know, the perhaps the fear of the new technology or whatever.
Well, that's certainly logical thinking, and I always think about it from the standpoint of your license plate, Land of Enchantment, which it is, especially as you're driving the middle of the night, and I've driven through there many, many times, you just feel some sort of closeness that you don't feel everywhere. In other words, it's a big empty space, but there's something close to you.
It's, you know, for people who haven't been to New Mexico, it's very hard to describe, and it truly can be a mystical experience living here sometimes. And you're right. You go out in the night in the middle of nowhere here, and you feel like you're, you know, almost on another planet sometimes.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place, and it's also a miserable place, and it's all together. By that I mean there's lots of hot, dry areas, and there's some beautiful places, and the mountains, and the way that they're created, and the way that the valleys and the roads intertwine, and the loneliness of it all. Yet you got Albuquerque and other places,
and it attracts, you know, it attracts a lot of spiritual seekers here.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. There's something going on here, and I'm not saying that you know, this is just a bunch of way out spiritualists or. I'm just saying that they're all, when you add all of the elements, the components of New Mexico together, and you must remember, I used to do my shows out of Las Vegas and in Nevada, and we have Area 51 and other places, and we're quite proud of it. But I think the real UFO action took place in New Mexico. And I think at Los Alamos, you mentioned it, something was going on there, at least, and may still be, besides developing the atomic weapons. Did you get any stories that really jumped out at you that were just horrible?
Horrible?
You know, terror-filled? I know there's a place, a ranch right close to where you live in Albuquerque, where the guards were afraid to go there at night because they would, some of them would disappear. And you talked about Sandia Base. There's a little Quonset hut up there where they insist the ET stayed for a while.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you hear all these stories. And then the Kirkland Air Force Base, remember, they even had the story of the craft landing on the runway there at one time.
Yeah, we heard that. And, you know, you probably remember the name Paul Benowitz.
Yeah, I just have done several shows on him. And I did a show of Rick Doty and the man who supposedly drove him mad.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go. We had just, we discussed that a little bit in the movie and some of the mysterious things that were happening to him. It wasn't until we'd finished the movie when some of this information about Richard Doty started coming out, and that perhaps this was all planned. But, yeah, I mean, that was, I think, you know, if it's true, I mean, I read a book by Greg Bishop, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we had Greg on the air.
Project Beta.
Right.
What he says in that book checks out with what I learned, what I learned independently here, talking to people like Gabe Valdez, who was a friend of Paul Benowitz's and stuff. And I think that's a pretty horrible thing, if indeed true, to drive somebody.
But that would be man-made.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was thinking more of extraterrestrial. I mean, as far as I can tell, other than cattle mutilations, there's not a history of a lot of bad things happening.
Not necessarily bad things. There was one thing which...
I mean, I guess if you, you know, you take a woman and you impregnate her, that's not good.
Well, the abductions are great for everybody, for sure. There was one case, and again, the name may come to you. You probably know this woman. She doesn't live here in New Mexico anymore. But we did talk to some people who knew her, and she claimed to have been abducted up near Cimarron, I believe, or somewhere in northern New Mexico, and taken to the underground base at Dulce, which...
Did you go down to Dulce to see if you could find that thing?
We went a couple times, and we got close. We got to see where supposedly the base was located, you know, a kind of a promontory, a mesa, but we never were able to get to it. It's a pretty rugged area up there.
Okay, go ahead with your story. I was just curious.
Well, this woman was apparently abducted and taken to this underground base, and according to her recollection, she claims that there were dead bodies and live bodies suspended in tanks in there that they were doing experiments on, and some of them may have been the hybrids we were talking about before. That kind of thing, and what she described was just terrifying.
Oh yeah, and we've had other stories about that too. There's the one story about supposedly some body parts found in one of those crashes near Corona, and nobody's ever talked about it. Being the sensationalist I guess I am, if you stop and think about it, why wouldn't the government talk to us after so many years? There must be something going on that's really bad besides them just stealing the technology.
You gotta wonder.
And so maybe there is a group that, and this ties back to legends of vampires, etc. Maybe, and you tie in cattle mutilations and what happens down in Brazil. Maybe there is a group of them that need human flesh.
You know, I can't imagine.
You know, how would the government explain that to you? Well, they get $100,000 a year out of the earth and around these missing people on the milk cartons and. You know, we can't do anything about it.
Well, you know, again, part of New Mexico is this mystery of, about the labs here, the military and the scientific aspect.
Well, there's lots of things going on there.
Again, that's kind of built into the culture. You assume there's things going on behind those fences that you're never going to find out about.
Right. Are you gonna try to do something else on this, or have you had enough of this genre?
I was recently talking to, my movie, after 10 years, High Strange, finally got picked up for distribution. I've been doing self-distribution, but it was picked up for distribution by UFO TV. And I've been talking to them about doing kind of a sequel to this, finding, you know, for one thing, finding some of these people now, you know, 10 years later and what's happened in their lives and that kind of thing. And there's been some other just...
Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's www.high-strange.com. dash nm.com.
And we have a link to that, of course, on our page here.
I believe so.
We, with the interview, when it's posted, everything will be fine. But a lot of people listen to us on a podcast and take it with them, and they say, boy, I'd like to know where that the website was. So it's high-strange-nm, New Mexico?
Yeah, dash-strange-nm, right.
Okay.
But I was looking at some of the stories that have come out are sort of, I guess what I'm looking at now is kind of the dark side of ufology. And I mentioned the Paul Benowitz case, and I think, you know, as I said, we started getting into that in the original movie, and now since Greg and some other people have come out, I think there's an even better story there to be.
Well, you need to pick up a book by Ann Druffel too. She writes about some of that, and not about Benowitz, but about other PhDs that suddenly died.
Yeah.
That have done this research.
You know about I think the other one of the really compelling parts of the movie involves Phil Schneider. And Phil was the one who first came out publicly and said there was an underground base at Dulce, and he'd help dig it as part of a contract with Aid. And I don't know if you've ever heard him.
I've never heard an interview with him.
We have a clip in the movie. It's part of a longer presentation he made somewhere, which the tape was just handed to us. We don't even know who made it or whatever. But he basically says, I'm putting myself in serious jeopardy. Before even talking about this.
Is this a fellow with the piano cord that committed suicide?
It was Robert Tooby.
Okay.
And
it was impossible for him to do that. But
well, there you go. He predicts in this movie that he's going to be murdered, and it will be called a suicide. And says that flat out, and he says, and I've had several other friends that this has happened to, so I just want you to know.
I hope you do the DVD, because there's a litany of them. There's at least 10 that I can recall.
Oh, wow.
Over the years. And you need to check, and I'll talk to you later about it. Our time is up. We urge people. It's available, the DVD, the name of it again?
High Strange New Mexico.
And I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And good luck with that Duke City
shootout,
where you actually take the script and shoot it right there.
Shoot the movies in a week, it's a hoot. So people can check that out at DukeCityShootout.org if they're interested.
Well, we have lots of people interested in things like that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye. I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over 2 decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the giant canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now, on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv's Grand Canyon Tours.